From our studios in downtown Washington, D.C., this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We're here today to talk about what I think to be is an extraordinarily interesting piece of research in terms of what it takes to successfully employ individuals in correctional facilities, what it takes to get them employed, what is the concept in this case is the power of small rewards. To talk about this research, we have two principals with us today. We have Stefan Laborio. He is the chief of the pre-release and reentry services division for the Montgomery County, Maryland Department of Corrections. And we have Ann Morrison Peel. Ann is a professor at Rutgers University. She has done a piece of research in conjunction with the Manhattan Institute regarding this research, preparing prisoners for employment, the power of small rewards. And to Stefan and to Ann, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, a little commercial before we get rolling with the program. We are very appreciative of all the calls, letters, emails that you're providing to us in terms of guidance, in terms of criticism, and in terms of suggestions for new shows. Please continue to get back in touch with me via Skype. You can follow me at, Twitter. You can follow me at Twitter/LenSipes, or you can email me at Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D dot Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at CSOSA.gov, or you can continue to comment in the blog. And with that, Stefan and Ann, welcome back to DC Public Safety.
Thank you.
And if you would, please, just summarize the research, the preparing prisoners for employment, the power of small rewards. Give me the gist of that research, please.
Yeah, well, let me tell you why I got into this particular piece. I've been reading and contributing to the literature on prisoner reentry for many years, and I've been struck by the difference between kind of the academic literature and the advocacy literature and the policy prescriptions that come out of that and the experience you get when you visit and see what correctional practitioners are doing about prisoner reentry on the ground. And I wanted to look at those differences and see what we could learn from that. We all know that inmates have poor employment prospects, you know, for a number of reasons, including their low skills and the tough labor market, et cetera. But when you go to some well-functioning employment or work release programs, you can see that inmates are working and are getting jobs, and I wanted to see what were the mechanisms that that correctional professionals use to get those kinds of results. And when I visited the pre-release center in Montgomery County, what I was particularly struck by was their use of very small kind of mechanisms to get inmates to behave in a way that helps prepare them for employment. And this is in stark contrast with the lofty policy proposals you often read about, for example, that require changing licensing requirements or subsidizing work or putting people into long-term training programs. And I thought this was very interesting.
The bottom line seems to be, Anne, is that there may be more effective ways of doing it than going after big macro-related issues and focusing on, I guess, the concept of small rewards.
Yeah, that was what was provocative about it. Not only is it perhaps more effective, but it might be a lot cheaper. And also the other thing that really sold me on this program is they're doing it at scale. They have a couple of hundred people in the program at any given time, and many of the prisoner reentry programs that get a lot of attention are very, very small.
Stefan, it's a perfect segue over to you. You are the chief of the pre-release and reentry services division for the Montgomery County Department of Corrections in Montgomery County, Maryland, directly outside of the District of Columbia. And you've been there for quite some time, and Montgomery County seems to have an extraordinarily good reputation in terms of reentry services. So give me a brief overview as to what it is that you do and this whole concept of small rewards.
Sure, Len. We've been fortunate in Montgomery County that we have a long tradition of our work release program. We began work release in the late 1960s and have had 15,000 people come through our doors. As a system, as a community, we made a decision back in the 60s, and it continues to the present day, that community safety is enhanced when we properly integrate individuals who are coming from confinement, whether a local jail, a state prison, or a federal prison, and if they're coming back into our community, we'd rather them come through a pre-release program like ours, where they can be attached to work, to family, to treatment, and other social mechanisms to improve their outcomes and the overall outcomes of the community. We've been doing it a long time, and I think over that period of time, we have learned what works and what doesn't. And what we are so pleased about with Anne's research is her sort of affirmation of one of the taglines of our program. And that tagline reads, freedom through responsibility. That one of the principal guiding premises of our program is that the individuals themselves who are reentering have to they have the work of identifying jobs, of identifying treatment, of identifying community support mechanisms that will assist them in the community. And our role as a program is to provide great structure and great incentives for them to aid them in proper decision-making.
Okay. So, now, either one of you can answer this question. Now, we in the criminal justice system, when we get together, when we talk about research, and Anne, I think you hinted at this, is that you know, it doesn't give you an awful lot of specifics. You know, if you are doing surgery, if you're doing law, if you're doing, I don't know, real estate, there are a lot of things that are recognized as best practices. It's been recognized via research that this is the way to go. This is what you should do. There is a consensus. And a lot of us get the sense that there seems to be little consensus regarding prisoner reentry, the different things that either one of you have talked about, they've been implemented in state facilities and county facilities throughout the country, correct? To some degree?
To some degree.
Yeah, to different degrees. And one of the things that's difficult about gaining practical advice is that the same term might describe really different programmatic structures.
Okay.
Right. And so it does matter a great deal to think about specifically what's underlying the, you know, the idea that people are talking about.
And, you know, I would add that, you know, while we have, you know, a several hundred year history of corrections in the United States, and we have studies that date back many, you know, decades concerning rehabilitation, the current discussion on prisoner reentry is rather recent. Some data to 1999, when then Attorney General Janet Reno and then NIJ Director Jeremy Travis began this discussion in trying to determine the reality of we have all these individuals coming back. So the research is still, the conversation is new. And what I find really encouraging is that when I meet with my peers and practitioners, both at the jail level and at the state prison level, whereas 10 years ago, you would get passing interest in reentry, now there is firm commitment by directors and top officials of all agencies about reentry. So there has been a sea change, and I think there's a real eagerness right now, as testament to the inquiries that you're getting on your podcast, for what works right now.
But one of the things that impresses me about the research, Anne, is that, you know, you try to examine some of the practices that have been going around the country. And what you're suggesting is that that's not necessarily the way to go. And you lay out a roadmap of specifics as to the proper way of doing this, correct?
Yeah, what I think is really interesting about the time that I spent talking to staff and inmates and reviewing some of the data at the pre-release center in Montgomery County is that it's quite different from what you often read about in terms of prisoner reentry. They do not provide jobs. What they're trying to do is to motivate and help support the job search because they consider that to be an important skill as well. So inmates find their own work, which requires then for them to get some help figuring out how to do online job search and online applications and a lot of kind of techniques that are necessary. And the way they support this effort is by requiring them to search and giving them greater rewards for doing that work and for finding employment. So, for example, one's curfew shifts by an hour the day one lands a job, and that's a very salient short-term, like that matters to people right away.
There are immediate rewards for small steps so they can see very clearly how this is helping them, at least, if nothing else, improving their lives while they're at the pre-release center.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important insight, because many of the programs that people talk about as being necessary are things like career development programs, so that people get not a job but a career, and these very long-term, high investment kind of ideas that require a lot of investment by the government, but also by the offender themselves. And most criminal offenders are characterized by having kind of impulse issues, right? Or people are looking for shorter term returns. I mean, that's something all of us struggle with, but that's something the inmate population struggles with more. And the program in Montgomery County totally recognizes that.
Stefan, do you feel that what Anna's saying is correct from the standpoint that, it's simply a matter of providing direct rewards for participation, and it's simply a matter of getting the offenders themselves to do it rather than the system to do it for them? Am I correct or incorrect?
Well, I think you're on the money, and I think Anne's findings are very true. You know, I think it's important to remember that, 95% of prisoner reentry programs that are discussed and researched take place in an institutional setting, a jail or a prison. Ours is a community-based program. If you were to drive by our program, you wouldn't recognize it as a correctional facility. It's a two-story building located near a metro station in a light industrial area, but not too far from neighborhoods either. What we do in our program is we take advantage of the fact that we're in the community. We want our clients to engage the community. Our goal is not to recreate programs on site, but rather take advantage of our unique opportunity to have the clients engage community resources in constructive ways.
All right, so basically they're living at the institution, they're taking maybe classes at the institution, but basically during the daytime, they are out trying to find work on their own with your assistance.
They're doing most of their activities outside of this program. In fact, if you were to come and visit our correctional facility during the day, you'd almost sense that it was as quiet as a library, because people are out at AA meetings, they're out on community passes, they're out working. We have individuals that are in high school or in colleges. They are engaging community institutions that will help them. Our goal is to help them identify those institutions, those jobs that are accessible and meaningful to them that can help them in their lives.
And I was struck by how many offenders came out of Stefan's institution with jobs, and how many had jobs with the same employer. I think it was, 6 months later?
Yeah, so there are, I guess there's three bits of evidence that I take as being very positive about this program. The first is that every inmate in the facility that I talked to could completely tell me all of the levels of the reward structure and exactly what they needed to do to get more rewards. So that was evidence to me that they are paying attention.
They're fully engaged.
They're fully engaged in the program. Yeah, and the other thing is that, the goal of the program is that people find work within 3 weeks, and most people find work within 3 weeks, and most of them are employed when they leave. About 90% are employed at the time of release.
I do want to dwell upon that before we move on to how many were employed with the same employer 6 months later. 90% left this facility employed.
Yes.
That is astounding.
And Stefan, that's a finding that pretty much holds up over time. I mean, it fluctuates a little bit from...
Yeah, it does, and I think it... We do have to recognize that we've had a very healthy economy. We're in a vibrant area in Montgomery County, but as Anne said, it has held up over the years in financial downturns as well as upturns. For our clients, we know that they're not going to go into jobs that necessarily will give a middle class lifestyle. These are entry level jobs. These are jobs in food services. It could be in grocery stores, could be with landscapers, construction, light industrial work, entry level jobs. And what we try to remind the individuals, there's no shame in that. This is what gets them in the door. This gets them habituated to work. This gets money in their pockets and in their bank account. As part of our incentive system and our structure system, we mandate savings, so that there are savings at the time of release. There are program fees that they have to pay. We are cognizant of their restitution and child support obligations. We make sure that we are developing payment plans. So they are beginning to assume their adult responsibilities. And, you know, with the right motivation, they can find jobs. And it is, you know, it's a very simple process. They are making cold calls. They are looking at newspapers, and they are applying for jobs online. I'll say recently, one of the things that we've had to do as a program to keep up with the way that job search and matching occurs in our society is to develop a career resource center with internet-based computers. And introducing the internet in a correctional facility is always challenging, but we did it carefully, and it's been remarkably successful.
If I remember correctly from the research, I think it was 50% or with the same employer 6 months later. Do I have that correct?
It's about, from the 2007, it was 54% 60 days later.
Okay, 60 days
later. Yeah, and it's we don't have the best follow-up data, you know, for what happens outside of this program. So this is suggestive, but I think it's really positive in that there are a lot of reasons not to stay employed with the same employer that you get at the pre-release center, because there are lots of restrictions that they place on what kind of jobs people can take.
Sure.
They can only have a job at a legitimate employer who is reporting those wages, who's participating in, you know, OSHA
Correct.
Requirements and all
Right.
the rest of that. So there could be other kind of better paying jobs that these people could get if they weren't so restricted by the center. So this 54% is, you know, necessarily a vast underestimate of what would be, you know, how many might be gainfully employed after 6 years.
You know, I do believe that if 90% of offenders coming out of correctional facilities throughout this country were employed upon release, our rate of recidivism would be dramatically lower than what it is.
Right.
The fact is that the great majority, somewhere, if memory serves me correctly, about two-thirds are not employed upon release. They haven't lined up a job. And a lot of these individuals are going through pre-release centers throughout the country, and that 90% figure just doesn't hold.
I think that's the what you've hit the nail on the head there. Very few systems have pre-release programs. Most inmates in this country are leaving from prisons and jails directly into the community.
That's correct.
And from my own experience, I can say that it is so difficult to choreograph the job search and matching process, where, you know, even if you think you have someone who is highly skilled in jail with specific skills, and you find an employer in the community who's willing to hire him at the day of release, it's very difficult to get that follow through. With the pre-release program, they are here in the community, and we can see them take that job and monitor them in that job. Let me also add, I mean, the reminder that Ann provides is, you know, many of our clients are low-skilled individuals, and like other low-skilled individuals in our economy, they are going to churn through jobs. So, like many work release programs, I don't expect them to hold on to these jobs as career jobs. Many of these jobs are not not career jobs. But, you know, the goal of attaching them to the labor market should reduce recidivism. We know from many studies that the highest risk of recidivating is shortly after release.
Right, in the first six months.
In the first 6 months, even the first 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could look at some of the research, and we're doing some of it right now, and you see the risk significantly decreasing day by day. So attaching them to work early on is helpful. Having them have a job when they leave the facility is incredibly helpful. They may jump to other jobs based on very legitimate reasons, some of which Anne has pointed out. I mean, one reason might be geography as well. Some of the jobs that they take are convenient to the pre-release program. But they may be moving to at a distance to the pre-release program, and that job may no longer be convenient.
Okay, let me take a risk here. It sounds like you're apologizing for the fact that people switch jobs. People switch jobs all the time.
Right.
To me, 90% coming out of the facility with employment is a remarkable achievement unto itself, regardless of how many hold on to the jobs. The whole point, yeah. I think, of this is to make sure that people are gainfully employed, to make sure that people do have mental health services, to make sure that people do have substance abuse services, to make sure that people understand what their rights and obligations are in terms of their own community supervision. The fact that you're able to provide 90% with offenders upon release with jobs, or they're providing those jobs in themselves with your guidance, I think is a remarkable achievement. We're more than halfway through the program. I'm going to reintroduce our guest, and then I'm going to get back to Stefan and Ann. What are the takeaways for others throughout the country? What are the things that they need to understand as to why your program is as successful as it is? Stefan Labolio, he is the chief of the Pre-Release and Reentry Services Division for the Montgomery County Department of Corrections in Montgomery County, Maryland. Ann Morrison Peel is a professor with Rutgers University. She wrote a piece of research with the Manhattan Institute, and that piece of research is called Preparing Prisoners for Employment. That's hard to say. The Power of Small Rewards. You can look at the research via the Manhattan Institute's website, which is www.manhattan-institute.org, or you can take a look at the activities of the Montgomery County Correctional Facility, www.montgomerycountymd, that's all basically one word, .gov/COR. Okay, and Stefan, what are the takeaways for everybody else? Okay, so different people listening to this program, if they're involved in corrections, they could be business people, they could be just students in the criminal justice system throughout the country or throughout the world for that matter. What are the takeaways? What is unique about your research? What's different about your research versus tons of other research on employment?
So I guess I have three takeaways that I want to start with. One, I want to pick up on what you were remarking on is the nearly 90% employed at release. I think that matters for several reasons. One, it just shows it can be done, right? And, there are some special features of the shop that Stefan runs, mostly its location, but it does show that it is possible to get people employed. And this is new for many of those residents. Many of them told me they'd never had savings before. They had never noticed or observed adults going to work on a regular basis. So this is giving people a new experience. It might be opening their eyes to a new way of life, as well as giving them a certain set of skills. The other thing that 90% says to me is it causes me to question some of the policy recommendations that come from the literature that basically presumes that it's just going to be impossible to employ people with the characteristics that most.
But isn't that a presumption? Because the great majority of people leaving correctional facilities throughout this country do not have employment. And while we operate, I think, one of the most one of the better parole and probation organizations in the country. On any given day, you're talking about 55% employed, 60% employed. The key here, the issue here, is that all of us within the criminal justice system have this sense of exhaustion. And sometimes we go into this with a perspective of, okay, we're going to do the very best we can to find people employment, but boy, this is really tough. And then somebody comes along and says 90%, and that makes us pay a lot of attention.
Right, and it is heavy lifting. But one of the things that really got me interested in this issue is of seeing some economics literature that's plotted earnings and employment for at the individual level before incarceration and after incarceration. And some of the highest employment levels that you see in individuals' histories are right after release from incarceration. And that just points to the importance of that as an opportunity, as a time and a place to intervene.
Okay, so there are obvious benefits for the 90%. And did you have two other takeaways?
Yeah, so the other things I wanted to say that are special about the way they run this program, one we already talked about is that it recognizes the short-term thinking and incorporates that into the structure of the program. And the last point is that the rewards are based on behavior, on action of the offenders. It's not based on attitudinal scores. It's not based on assessments. And the kind of measures that are frequently used in corrections to move somebody from one placement to another. This is completely behavioral. If you get a job, your curfew changes. If you stay employed, you get more passes to have visit or opportunities to have visitors. It's based on what your actions are, not based on any kind of judgment, either by a psychological scale or by the subjective judgment of any professional in the department.
And I'm not going to suggest that, correctional facilities throughout the country and correctional systems change an emphasis on or an examination of what employers should be asking for in terms of criminal histories. I was taking a look at research the other day, suggestions that, at what point does a person become a safe risk to the employer? At what point is the person fully going through the process of reacclimation, that he's now an employable individual, he's no longer a risk to public safety, is there a way to measure that? I mean, we struggle with these larger societal issues of how much money to provide, liaisons with employers. These are all very big, costly projects that involve a tremendous amount of person power, and in many cases necessitate a good degree of money. What I'm hearing from the both of you is that there may be a more precise way of looking at this through this concept of small rewards, through this concept of offenders finding jobs on their own, but with guidance by the staff of Stephen's pre-release center.
Len, I would sort of make two points. One is I think our program on a day-to-day basis proves that correctional systems can manage relatively large correctional populations in a community setting if the right incentive structures are in place and the right mechanisms to ensure services and accountability are in place. On a given day, 30% of sentenced inmates in Montgomery County are in our program.
Mm-hmm.
We have individuals that have a whole host of different offense types. We don't exclude by offense type other than escapees.
Okay.
That's a takeaway for many correctional institutions. Most correctional institutions don't have a pre-release program. We do. When you have a program like ours, it means that, as in 2008, collectively our population earned $2 million in revenues, in income, paid $300,000 in taxes, child support, hundreds of thousands of dollars in child support and restitution. Many benefits there. The other takeaway is that when you have a program like this, and you structure it properly, what it allows us to do is to provide reentry on an individualized basis. We set up incentives and a structure, but we recognize that individuals come into our program with many different backgrounds, many different strengths, many different deficits. And rather than us point to what they need, they are led to understand what hurdle do they need to overcome that's been bedeviling them. So in that way, it's a more efficient allocation of reentry resources. Oftentimes in our field, we treat offenders as a homogeneous group, and we think of this that the intervention has to be a one-size-fit-all strategy, as Ann was describing. We think we have to have a locational program of a certain type. We almost are in a position of picking winners of in terms of the type of jobs that people should be pursuing and getting, rather than really finding out what are people interested in by and what people have aptitudes about. And through our structure, through recognizing that individuals will act as rational agents, we find that they're able to make good decisions themselves. One of the most interesting times in our program is when an individual who's never gotten a job before gets a job, as Ann described. They surprise themselves that they can do it by phone calls, by interviewing, by following our guidance. It's very empowering to them to do it, and it teaches them a lifelong skill.
And I think that lifelong skill is something that is extraordinarily important. I've been told by people that have employment programs within various prison systems, state use industries, if you will. The concept is, in many cases, not providing a skill, but getting that person acclimated to the workaday world, that they have to work together as a team. They cannot mouth off at the boss, that they have to work together, that they may have to skip lunch to make a deadline, that sometimes basics like this are the most important things to teach, and that those individuals going through those programs have a lower rate of recidivism compared to those individuals who do not.
Yeah. You know, I think for prospective employers, the best way to mitigate their fears about hiring an individual who has had court involvement is to see that that person has a work experience that has been successful and they have a reference. So that, you know, if they leave our program and they've had, you know, 6 months of working every day and have risen through the ranks, that will do more than anything else, you know, than our vouching about a person's ability. Their work record will speak for their ability to do a job for a future employer.
Andy, have a way of wrapping all this up from the research perspective?
Well, I think the real question that I'm left with at the end of the day is, how can you take these lessons and really implement them at some high level of scale? Because we have many, many offenders who need help getting into employment after they leave prison, and we need to really think about how to take lessons from programs like this that can be implemented at a large scale and not in kind of a boutique fashion.
Amen. Amen. And I think that was the point of the program, is to try to get people to understand that there may be different ways of doing it, and different ways of doing it may involve an effort much more minute, much more direct than the way that they're looking at the employment of offenders.
Correct.
And that sense of precision, which I feel is totally lacking, not totally lacking, which some feel is lacking within a lot of the within a lot of the literature. The sense is that through talking to you and talking to Stefan, that it's a matter of structure, but it's a matter of empowering them to do their own research. It's a matter of empowering them to create their own opportunities. And these are lifelong skills that they can take with them throughout the rest of their lives, and it may not be, and I'm not suggesting that we do not do these things, but it may not be massive job programs, it may not be massive training programs, it may be something as small as what Stefan is currently doing there within Montgomery County.
And these things seem small to us. I just like to leave with this, but to the people in the program, this is hard work. You know, to be expected to be up every day, to be looking for jobs for hours in a row rather than minutes in a row, you know, to have to stick with the program is really, really hard work. Many of them told me, I have never worked this hard in my life. So we call it small, but it's requiring big changes of them.
And you've got the final word. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Stefan Labolio. He is the chief of the Pre-Release and Reentry Services Division of the Montgomery County Department of Corrections in Montgomery County, Maryland. The website for Stefan's operation, www.montgomerycountymd.gov/COR. Ann Morrison Peel, who is a professor at Rutgers University, did this research in conjunction with the Manhattan Institute. The research is available at www.manhattan-institute.org. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to DC Public Safety. Once again, we do appreciate all of the comments. We do appreciate all of the emails and all of the suggestions for how we can improve the show. Please continue them. And everybody, please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.